Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Slight Edge Advantage. And here is the place that you come when you're done making excuses, when you're looking for the next level of success, when you're tired of chasing the competition and not understanding why you can't catch them and surpass them. Well, most of the time, it's something little that you're not doing. You're not reading enough. You're not knowing enough about them. You're not knowing enough about your industry. Or maybe it's you're not moving your ass enough. You're not working hard enough. Today's guest, which I'm going to play the intro for in a minute, embodies the hard work that it takes to succeed physically and mentally. And that's something that we always need to work on. I recently went back to, after 25 years of not fighting, I went back to fighting, and I lost 40 pounds before to get my body in shape. Very disciplined about that. Now I'm rolling in jiu-jitsu with these 25, 30-year-old giant, these military kids, these firemen, these monster kids who just manhandle me. And at 52 years old, I'm okay with it. I hate it every second of it, but the next day I wake up and I feel 1% better because I know that I'm putting myself in uncomfortable situations every night. And that's what it takes. And so I'm going to bring on this gentleman today, which we're going to talk a lot about endurance and putting your body through hell and then facing adversity and having to change tactics. So let's get into it with my guest today. Today's guest is the owner of Steg Customs Homes and the Awakening Retreat for Men and Women in Sedona, Arizona. He's also the best-selling author of Chopping Wood, An Old School Mentality in a New Age World on How to Get Shit Done. Now, Jim is he's in a list of really who's who of American athletic elites when it comes to ultra marathons. He's been a 4-time Ironman triathlete, 65-time Olympic triathlete, 20 times Navy SEAL Crucible finisher, 9 years as a rodeo bull rider. He is a licensed skydiver, a philanthropist, coach, motivational speaker, thrill seeker, and his passion is really to help others realize their best versions of being themselves. And also, he had some adversity as well. He suffered a heart attack in June of 2019, which kind of changed his trajectory. He's very vigilant now on internal health and also becoming a marketing weapon. Please welcome my guest to the Slight Edge Advantage, Jim Steg. Welcome, welcome. Mr. Steg, I'm honored to have you here, man.
I love that intro. I love it.
Good, man. It's an honor to have someone like you here on the Slight Edge Advantage. It really embodies what we talk about, is doing that the hard stuff and putting your body through these endurances. How did that start?
You know, I've always been an athlete, starting from a kid back in Illinois. I used to live in Illinois up till I was about 14 years old. And then we moved to Arizona back in 1979, right after football season in high school, my freshman year. I've always been, you know, I've had my uncles. My dad was he passed last year, October 14th. He gave me the working side. When I get into my story, you'll understand that was a double-edged sword for me. My uncles, on the other hand, were very, very athletic. So they always had me out playing football. In Illinois, we'd be up against the high schools. They'd have the batter's box drawn it up on the wall. They'd be throwing rubber balls at me, fast pitch. Swinging and hitting, you know, and every once in a while they bean me, you know, as a seven, 8-year-old kid. Holy shit, that hurt. But I've just always, I don't know, something about myself. I always love to push my mind and body past what the average person will go. You know, and one of my mottos for my business is get comfortable being uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I'm a true believer that there's power on the other side of pain.
That's so true. And I was talking about in the intro about I went back to jiu-jitsu after 25 years away from any kind of martial arts. Jiu-jitsu wasn't around back then here in America very prevalently, but I was in American Kempo and I did very well in it, but it was hard on the joints, you know. So getting back into jiu-jitsu is really easy on the joints, but rolling with these 250, 60 pound kids who are full of piss and vinegar and energy, it's a challenge. And it's only been a few weeks, but I'm learning how to breathe. And I feel like they're just so damn smart, and learning jiu-jitsu is hard. And so I feel like I'm slowing them down. I always feel like I'm the rock, you know, I'm not helping them progress. But really, when you're rolling with someone like me, and I'm doing things wrong, it benefits both parties. But that I go home and I'm so freaking sore and I'm tired and everything. And I go, I'm feeling ego. My ego's down in the dirt, you know. But the next day I wake up, and if I do skip a day or something, I feel like dirt inside. Where now when I do go and I feel okay, you know, I know I was in a fight yesterday, but man, I feel so good. And how do you transfer that though to, you know, David talks about 60%, and I don't have to say his last name to someone like you or anyone listening to this podcast. They know who I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
I have that. I think it's at 20% for me, where I just start hitting the deck, you know, physically. How'd you build those calluses so young?
You know, I don't know. It was just something that I think it was ingrained in my DNA. And I just, as I started to get older, you know, I think around 18, 19, 20, I think it was 19, 20. I just said, you know what, I'm going to start running some mountains. I start running mountains in Phoenix area, and, you know, started doing Camelback Mountain. Then it just progressed. It got longer and longer, and I kept on challenging myself to see how far I could go. You know, then I got into, 50 mile races. Then I got into 100 mile races.
When you're doing that, though, do you think about the 50 miles or do you think about the next fence post?
You can't, cannot, you know, I posted several times, stop looking for the finish or stop looking for the top. You have to submerge yourself in the moment. And if you don't, I'll give you an example. I helped a buddy of mine the last 2 years. We have a race that's called the Stagecoach 100. It goes from Flagstaff up north, starts at 7,000 feet, Flagstaff to the Grand Canyon. It's 100 miles. And they cut you off at 32 hours. Well, the last 2 years, we both did it. Well, I took this year off. I wanted to start getting into some bodybuilding stuff. And I just, for the last 25 years, I beat up my body. My joints started hurting. And it got to be too much. I'm like, Josh, I'm going to take a year off. He's like, well, I'm going to try it the third time. So what I did was, and I haven't been running a whole lot, I ran him in. A buddy of mine, we went up this past weekend. A buddy of mine ran with him through the night. He started Saturday morning at 7:30. My buddy ran with him Saturday night. And then I took him in the last 12 miles to the finish line. And he was struggling real bad. And I started to think, and, you know, I started hurting a little bit too, because you're using your muscles the same way. And I started to think, I was telling my wife about this. It's very simple for me to take that switch and shut it off. Mm-hmm. Get rid of that pain and just stop thinking about the pain. And consequently, it goes away. Wow. Everything in life is up top.
Hold on.
Everything is up top.
That's huge. I mean, that's a big thing. Because when you talk about things going away like that, isn't it, though, I got some fire on that too. Isn't it a sign that says you're damaging yourself? Maybe like, or is it when it comes to certain pains and certain signals, it's just the weakness is the fear. You know, fear is weakness leaving your body or whatever that saying is. When do you know I have to stop? Because I snapped my damn ankle. I got flat feet. I was 275 pounds. And I was listening to everyone, you know, Goggins and Jocko. And I'm just running zero my whole life to 6 miles a day within like 2 weeks, and I snapped my tendon on my ankle.
Yeah.
So, and then I'm just like duct taping it like they did in you know, Navy SEAL because I read all their stuff, and that was dumb because I'm not that wasn't the stage of my life yet. So I guess when is when do you know? Shut it off, power through it. Don't be soft, or I'm having chest pains. Call 911.
Yeah, your body will tell you. I mean, it'll shut down. I had a race like that last year. I'll tell you about that. And then I'd like to give you an idea, or the audience here, an idea of how all of this started. So I had a race last year. It was in Beaver, Utah. It was 62 miles. I thought, okay, I've been training up in Flagstaff at 7,000 to 9,000 feet.
Wow.
I've been running mountains up there. We have Humphreys up there. It's 9 miles up and down. You go from 9,000 to 12,500 feet. And I was training like a son of a bitch, just constantly training. For this race, it was 62 miles in Beaver, Utah, and you have to climb 18,000 feet. But those 18,000 feet, that's up and down between 9,000 and 12,500. Totally different ball game.
Yeah.
So I started this race. I felt great, and I did not take care of my energy systems right off the bat. I didn't eat. I wasn't hydrating. I thought, shit, I can gut out 62 miles, no problem.
Dang.
Absolutely not. I got to mile 25 during a 4,000 foot climb, and my body just started down. My chest started to hurt. And, you know, I had a heart attack June 5th of 2019. My chest started to hurt. My body started to shut down. I'm like, what the hell is going on? I've trained my ass off for this. And my body just shut down. I got through half the race. You know, and a lot of elite runners, there's days that it's just not your day.
Yeah.
It's done. Your body just shuts down. Okay. Well, just to make it to the top of the hill of my 4,000 foot climb, at mile 29, I had the people behind me picking up the flags. They were just, I was so slow and my body just shut down. That's an example of how your body just automatically it just shuts down. 29 miles. I did 29 miles, 8,000 feet. And I had the toughest part of the race to go.
Oh, wow.
And it just shut me down. So that's an example of, you know, how your body, your body's just going to shut down. Your mind is so powerful, and your body will follow up until the point where your body's just going to shut down.
Yeah. I think 2% of the public ever get there.
No, there's not many people. A lot of people don't understand, you know, and I had a long conversation with my buddy, and he agreed this past weekend. He doesn't know if he could have made it, because me and him ran that race alone the last couple of years. We didn't have any pacers. And he was like, you know what? I don't know if I'd finish this race without you guys. So a lot of it has to do with your mental capacity.
Yeah. But I think when you're running with people, even if they're on the course, that there's an energy there that's different than a guy trying to get in shape, trying to run laps around his neighborhood alone.
Yeah.
You know, just getting a buddy to run with you, getting somebody, even if it's turn your phone on, go to Facebook Live and just show people that you're doing it, because there's an energy there, you know, accountability and stuff. So that's big too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I guess, you know, when I'm breathing is my biggest hamper. For number one, I can't breathe. I stop breathing. I can't catch my breath. I hyperventilate. So the switch that come from losing this weight this last time and now rolling with these guys is I'm doing much better at just slowing down, breathing, thinking about the next move before taking it. Don't panic and don't try to muscle everything, because these guys are just so big, and use technique and breathe through it. So I think I only gas myself maybe once a night now. It's normally in the, we call them situationals, where there's no rules, kind of just trying to get out of it. Don't, you know, you're trying to win or lose. Yeah. And, you know, I still get a little gassed, but it's a much quicker recovery. But running, I had so much problems running. You know, the LBs didn't happen, but learning how to breathe, how do you even, is that just come normal to you?
Again, I'll go back to mindset. And I do a lot of things. I call it the Sacred Six. And that's my retreat that I started up here.
I love that.
It has to do with your mindset. It has to do with how you breathe. I do a lot of Wim Hof breathing. I do a lot of cold water immersion. I've got a freezer out in the garage that I jump into. 5 minutes, you know, I do it about four times a week, 5 minutes at about 34 to 38 degrees. So yeah, there's a process, but let me back up. I'm going to give you an overall view of really who I am and what happened to me and where I am today. After high school, did a little bit of college, played a little football. Then I started working for a big company, a package distribution company, and I climbed the ladder extremely fast with that company. I went from unloading trucks to loading trucks to part-time management to full-time management to actually running the facility, 250,000 square foot facility at 300 employees a night, just learning how to run a business, moving quick. And then an unfortunate thing happened back in 2002, which I would say it's an unfortunate thing, but I will say it's a very fortunate thing that happened. They accused a couple of my guys of not operating the proper way, cheating on some numbers. I proved them wrong. And I said, you know what? If you take my guys, you're going to have to take me. And they said, well, we're going to take you and we're going to take your boss. After that, I left. I hit the ground running. I hit the ground running back in 2002. I got my real estate license. I started building homes back in 1997. I built my first home. I bought a home, remodeled it, and then I built my first home on 3 acres back in 1997. And I looked at my wife and I said, you know what, babe? If I ever leave this company, this is what I want to do. So in 2002, I had an opportunity. However, my work ethic and my anger because of what happened, I gave my life to this company. That company named me in 2001 Manager of the Year across the United States. So I looked at them in 2002 and I said, so you voted me Manager of the Year last year across the United States, and now you're calling my guys a thief. I said, I tell you what, I gave you my life for 19 years. I'm out.
Wow, almost 20 years. And of integrity, value, you know, and they could do that.
And you know what? I started to realize that. And I thought to myself, I went home and looked in the mirror. You know, I had two young daughters at that time. So I was scared. I didn't know what the hell I was going to do. I knew I wanted to build homes. I knew I wanted to sell some. I wanted to get into the real estate. I wanted to get in selling and buying real estate. So that's what I did.
Yeah.
So my anger fueled my ambition. However, as you'll start to see, that was it was a double-edged sword. So I took off. Within 60 days, I got my real estate license. I had no clue what I was doing selling real estate. I was also building homes. I'd build a home. I would sell the one I was in. I'd move into that next one. It was just down the block. So I started building homes constantly. Every 6 months, I'd build another home, move. Even though it was down the block, it still created a lot of chaos. I was training. I was doing Ironmans. I never slept. I was constantly on the go.
I resemble that comment.
So what I did was I interviewed a handful of realtors. And I took a little bit from each one of them. And the one thing that I realized, and I made it my motto, is they can't pay you if they don't know you. So I spread my name all over the place. My first year of real estate, having no clue, being brand new in the real estate industry, I sold $14 million in real estate my first year, rookie of the year at Prudential Arizona Properties. And then I started to see how well I could do building homes. At that point, that took off. So I was training, I was building homes. My business blew up. I let my real estate license go because I started building homes. Fast forward up to 2013, 14, 15, wow. I started really training on long distance runs. My motto was, people are like, man, you got to get some sleep. I was operating on 3 to 4 hours of sleep a night.
Yep.
That I didn't realize I was so pigheaded. And I was so focused on making sure that I was going to be successful with or without you. I was just driving through as much as I possibly could. Mm-hmm. Sleeping 3 hours a night, getting up, training. That's when I was doing my Ironmans. That's when I was doing I did some Navy SEAL training. I was training for that. It was just absolutely out of control. 2018, I put a charity event together, another iron in the fire. I put a charity event together. I got 18 homes going at one time, 18 projects going at one time. I'm training for a charity event that I'm putting together. It was called the 11 Summits, 2019 and 2020. We donated all of our money to a company up in Colorado, based in Colorado, called CASA, Court Appointed Special Advocates. We raised $250,000. I brought on 15 of my closest friends that are athletes, trainers, and I monitored them through Strava. I wanted to make sure that I told them, I said, if you are going to do this with me, you have to raise $2,500 minimum, and you're going to have to train. Everyone's going to finish this.
Yeah.
So what 11 Summits was, it was 48 hours. Nonstop, back to back, 11 mountains from Flagstaff to Sedona down to Phoenix. 50 miles, 25,000 feet climbed, extremely successful. I was on channel 10, 12, 15 in the morning. It absolutely blew up. A month to the day after that 2019 11 Summits, now, remember, I was training for 6 months. I ran 300 to get ready for this in 2019. I ran 383 miles just to get ready for it in 6 months, and I climbed 292,000 feet. A month to the day after that was over, we finished on Cinco de Mayo, May 5th of 2019.
Wow.
Doing a little workout in the garage, and I felt like a truck was on my chest.
Hmm.
And my armpit started to hurt, all on the right side. My jaw started to hurt.
Wow.
And I thought, something's up. I went in and started doing some breath work. I started to meditate to see if I can meditate it away or breathe it away. And all of a sudden, all this anxiety hit me. I walked outside. I looked at my wife. I said, hey, babe, she was working out with us. I said, hey, babe, Google what symptoms of a heart attack. She did. She goes, oh, shit, we better get you to the hospital. So I went into the hospital. They had me in there for about 3 hours. They pulled my blood twice. The second time they pulled my blood, they said, we need to get you in the cath lab. Something's wrong.
Yeah.
The troponin level was high. I didn't know what that meant. I just said, my mindset was, just get me in there, open me up, fix me, because I got to get my ass back to work. So that was the double-edged sword. My work ethic that my dad taught me, but my fitness level, as you'll see, as I went in, they shot dye in me, and they found out that when I woke up 20 minutes later, they go, check this out. We see about 1 in 50,000 people like this. And they go, you're an athlete, aren't you? And I said, absolutely. Yeah. They showed me the left side of my heart where the veins were reaching over to protect the right side.
Wow.
My right side, then they showed me a video of my right side. The blood was coming up and it stopped. My right artery was 100% blocked.
Unbelievable.
They said,
what caused the blockage? You're eating right.
They said, you have been operating for 8 months on about 40% of a heart. I said, do you know what I've done in the last 5 months? I ran 383 miles. I climbed 292,000 feet. They looked at me and they said, "You, when you get out of here, you better go buy a lottery ticket." Because, right. And I told them about 11 summits. They said, if this would have happened on any of the mountains, up north, you would have been dead.
Wow.
So yeah. A week later, I sat down with my good buddy of mine, who's my private practice doctor, David Boyd. And I looked at him and I said, "David, how in the hell can I go my whole life knowing how I look on the outside, but have no clue what's going on the inside?" So from that day, he started a company called Blind Spot Medical, and he's completely blown. I'm on a case, his first case study, because I was his first client. So I had my videographer, Neil Bryce, come in from Utah, and we did a case study with David. And when I sat down with him that week later after my heart attack, he was looking at my labs and he started to turn white. Oh. And I said, "David, what's going on?" He goes, "Do you know what your troponin level was?" I said, "Well, I remember them saying something about troponin before I went in the cath lab, but I just ignored it. I said, just fix me. I got to get back to work."
I've never heard of troponin.
Well, troponin is an enzyme that your heart gives off when it's in distress. And there's certain levels. David said, I've worked in emergency rooms and I've never seen anybody come out of the emergency room with a heart attack like yours at a level 7. You were 15 and a half. He goes, "I don't know how the hell you survived."
Yeah.
He looked at me and he goes, "Did it hurt?" I go, "Dave, you know my pain threshold is pretty deep. I just was focused. I needed to get out of there. I need to get something. If they had to crack me open, do whatever you got to do."
Yeah.
He goes, "I don't even know how you survived with a troponin level at level 15 and a half. I've never seen anybody over a 7 that came out alive." So at that point, Jeremy, I went home, looked in the mirror. I changed everything. I came up to Sedona. I said, "I'm done." So I started, I deep dove into internal health.
Yeah.
On what it is to live healthy inside. And that's when I started my retreat up here. Mm-hmm. I've got luxury custom homes that I build up in Sedona. And I just changed how I look at things.
Right.
I get sleep. I don't fuck around with that anymore. Make sure I get enough sleep. I try to keep my stress level down. I just got back into running mountains after doing my bodybuilding this past year. Mm-hmm. And I can't get away from running. That's part of who I am.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So that's in a nutshell my story.
Well, so when you talk about knowing your insides and having the Blind Spot Medical with your doctor and his new business, how are there tests that people run now to see their arteries? Is it something that's preventative that we can go and get checked on? I mean, that sounds like it's hard to get access to that.
It's really not. You can. I get my blood drawn. Just had my blood drawn on. Oh. What is today? Today is Tuesday. I had my blood drawn last Thursday. They send it over to my doctor, David Boyd, and we get on a call and he reads me my labs to see where my levels are. Once every 3 years, I'll go back in. I'll do an MRI and a CT scan. And what they do is they look at my brain, my lungs, my heart, my stomach, my prostate, my liver. So I'm able to see an architectural rendering on the inside of my body. I also follow a handful of individuals on YouTube, internet, on internal longevity. So I'm pretty vigilant right now on making sure that I keep my weight where it is. I exercise constantly, which I did that to the extreme before, but I'm getting back into that right now because I love the mountains and I just love being out there running. But yeah, you can go in and take a look at that. You know, I can give you a link for David Boyd. You can go and look him up and you know, tell your audience here how to go and find out how to keep an eye on the inside of your body. Yeah. It's very, very important because, you know, it's not uncommon for elite athletes just to fall over dead running through the mile, you know, running through the forest. you have no idea what's going on in the inside of your body. Right. You know, you go to a Western medicine doctor and he taps your knee, checks your heart. That doesn't do shit.
No, they can grit that. So they can get so much more deeper with just by reading your blood now. Cause I do, absolutely. I have a 36 page report they do on me every 6 months. And they've been doing it for a couple of years. And as big as I was and as little as I sleep from midnight to 1:30. I have a tinnitus really bad because I was a professional drummer and I played since I was 4 and I didn't take care of my hearing. So I have tinnitus. I sleep from 12 to 1:30. Then I wake up and I'm up till 4. And then I sleep from 4 to 5:30. Wow. So I sleep twice for 90 minutes. So I don't have those deep cycles that go through over and over again like you're supposed to reset things. I've done that for 10 years now, 10 years. And it used to be 3 hours, midnight to 3, and then it kind of shifted over time. That's about average. I'll sleep through the night maybe once a week or maybe twice a week from midnight till 6 or 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
Maybe twice a week. I want to sleep, but I don't. I just don't. I'm conditioned. But my blood has been, even again, when I was heavy, everything was really, really good and healthy. And I've always been high energy and high level. So I don't, you know, there's no need to really push myself to really kick it. Do anything extreme to sleep. I just go with it. You know, when I need to sleep more, I will, you know, I guess. So
how old are you, Jeremy?
I'm 52.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you breath work?
I started a little bit of that. Started a little bit, especially recently with this jiu-jitsu starting up again. I have a person who is very good at it, Ari. And he's come here to the studio and walked me through a couple of things. And I watched some video through it. It's hard. It's hard. It's hard. You know, it's like anything new. It's hard to stick with it for me, but it's just about not being lazy.
Well, I noticed that when I do breath work before I go to bed, I'll usually do a cold shower or my ice bath, and then I'll get out and I'll do my breath work or vice versa. Depends on how I feel. If I'm strung out, I'll do my breath work. Then I'll settle my body and my mind, and then I'll jump into the ice bath, and then I'll go to sleep. But I tell you, doing breath work before you go to bed, unbelievable. My daughter had restless leg syndrome.
Oh, yeah.
The first time that I let her use my app for my breath work, it took her restless leg syndrome right away the first time.
That's very interesting. I'll look into that more. The cold bath, I'm actually trying to get one installed in the next probably 12 months. We bought a house a year ago, moved into it after a year of renovations on the inside. Now we're doing the outside, the roof and the electric and everything. So one of the goals is to put an ice bath, more of the circular kind that Tony Robbins has,
yeah,
or you just jump in, chill for a few minutes, and then stand up and get out. That's in the plans. It's on the plan, but it's probably the last thing that I pay for, because everything else is more of a priority for the wife and for everything that we do down here. But that is on the list. My a friend of mine, Joel Gandera, has one. So whenever I go to his house, we try to jump in his. But his is in the 30s. His is in the 40s, probably the high 40s. And it takes the breath right out of you getting in there. You know.
Oh yeah.
So that's one way to learn how to do breath work, is getting in that cold. And down here in South Florida, there is no cold water in the shower. It's hardly ever cold that, like you need it to be. You turn it on right from the beginning and it's not going to be, it gives you a little bit of shortness of breath, but it's not cold. We live near Miami, Florida.
Yeah.
At sea level.
Yeah. You know, down in Phoenix too. You don't get cold showers up here in Sedona. It's 15 degrees cooler. In the winters, we get a little snow here and there, and the water gets cold. If I don't have time, or I'm cleaning out my freezer, I'll jump in the shower. But for the most part, anytime I take a shower, I'll end it with cold.
I guess if you go from, you know, get it as hard as you can for the last few minutes, and then just pow, turn it, and that range will probably do some good, right?
Oh yeah. It's very, very good for you.
So tell us about, I'm going to share the screen here. Tell us about your book.
Chopping Wood.
Yeah, I like the name of it. An old school mentality in a new age world on how to get shit done.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to, I dug into that. God, when did I write that? I wrote that several years ago. I can't remember if it was after my heart attack or before. I think it might have been before. But anyways, I just, I felt a calling to help other people fight their fears, you know, push their mind and body past the threshold to help them understand that, yeah, you're going through pain. May it be with your relationships, may it be with your business, may it be with your physical aspect. You're going through pain, but it doesn't have to be going through pain constantly, because I'm a firm believer, if you just stick with it, no matter what it is, with your business, with your relationships, with your physical, the physical things that you do, there's power on the other side of that pain.
Yes.
And to never quit. That's the last thing you want to do, is quit. And it's important for people to understand that. You know, I've done a lot of posting on social media over the years, and people are like, how in the fuck do you do that shit? How do you push your mind and body? And you know, everybody out there has somebody that they look up to.
Yes.
You know, David Goggins looked up to every time he was going for these long miles or doing the pull-up record. You know, he's playing Rocky. He's looking up to Rocky. Well, I look up to David Goggins.
Right.
You know, I've listened to Can't Hurt Me 8 times. I don't read, I listen, because I'm always in my vehicle.
It's the best one ever, right? The mix between the podcast and the book goes so deep.
Yeah. And then Never Finished, you know. I've listened to that now 5 times. So it's just, the guy's a badass and he gives me inspiration, and it just gives more fuel to the fire. So I think that's why I wrote that book, to give other people an idea. I'm just an average guy, but I have the ability. I have the ability not to quit, and I push my mind and body both in my business, in my marriage, and in my physical, you know, races.
Yeah. So you've integrated it into every part of your life.
Everything.
Yeah. Which is important. I think, and like anything, it's the habits that they say take, you know, X amount of times to grow and to develop a habit. When you're going through those pains, like I've been back in jiu-jitsu for 3 weeks now, and I'm still hating it every night. I hate it. Every second I hate it. I don't like it, but I know inside I want to like it, you know, and it's been 25 years since I was into it. And it's like, if it would be so much easier not to do it, but I know that in a month, in 3 months, and at some point something's going to click where I'm going to have done these moves 5 times, 8 times. And it's just going to say, oh yeah, that's right. And that mind connection will be there. And I'll have the partner that goes, wow, you got me, you know? And I'll know from that point on, I'll be happy. So it's just getting to that where it clicks. And you never know when that click is going to come, depending on what you're doing through your stages of life too. And that's the part I like, that unknown, which is kind of not normal. But
I resonate with that, because when I started doing triathlons back in 2001, I used to hate to run flat ground. But I enjoyed the Olympic triathlon so much and the Ironman competitions so much that I taught myself to love to run flat ground, because I was always running mountains. So I just taught myself, because I understood that I love the Ironman competitions and I love competing at that high level in the Olympic triathlons. So I just, you know what? Every time I go out, I love it. I love it. And eventually I just taught myself to love it.
That's right. Well, that's what we're doing here today, is saying that these things that give you a slight edge advantage, if they were easy, everyone would do it.
Yeah.
You know? And the people that are ahead of you, they're not twice as good as you. They're not doing things twice as hard as you. They're not working even twice as hard as you.
No.
It's little things that you don't like to do that they're doing every day.
Uh-huh.
And if you just absorb and you adapt and you adopt – you are going to surpass them, especially if you start to love it, because everybody has legs and everyone has a distance that they're cut off. And especially I love when it's the skill over the talent. So I love when I'm chasing somebody with talent and I'm developing skill, mm-hmm. because at the end of the day, skill will trump talent unless talent loves skill, which is very rare, because people then just lean on their talents. And it's the professional athletes, and then you're chasing, you know, LeBron James, good luck. But if you're chasing the guy down at the park, his talent's going to run out. He's going to run, especially if you're working hard at your skill.
And I remember when I was very, very competitive. I was training 7 days a week for my Olympic triathlon. You know, Olympic triathlon is 1500 meter swim, 24.9 mile bike and a 6.2 mile run. So everything in those races, it was all red line. So that's how I trained. I was in a master's class swimming on Tuesdays and Thursdays, biking and running Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, just, you know, doing bricks all the time. And I remember saying to my buddies, you see my back?
Yeah.
Get used to it. And I would tell them, I would be like, you know, and this is friendly competition. I would tell them, you might be smarter than me. You might be more talented than me. You might have more get up and go, but I guarantee you, you will never outwork me. You'll never outwork me. That's what I have over you.
Yeah.
While you're out there at the bar, I'm training. While you're sleeping, I'm training. While you're out there playing grab ass, I'm training.
Yeah.
And I've done very, very well in Olympic triathlons and, you know, just a lot of things that I've done in life, the physical nature. And like I said, I take that mindset physically. And I, like I told you, in real estate, in building, and where I am right now with building luxury custom homes, you just can't quit. You got to have that mentality. You know, I don't look at other contractors as competition. I actually look at them in cooperation, because the only individual for me in my competition, the only individual that's my competition right now is that guy I see in the mirror every morning.
Absolutely. Well, listen, I want to land the plane here. This has gone longer than we normally go, but you know, I think the lessons were well deserved and well needed by my audience. I know they're going to love it. So just to share, on Instagram, it's Steg Custom Homes, STEG Custom Homes. That's your Instagram. Chopping Wood is on Amazon, and it is an old school mentality in a new age world on how to get shit done. It's a real book. I've read the intro. I kind of look over the titles, chapter titles, kind of way I do if I'm going to decide up read a book that there tells me the most. This is a book for a lot of people in my audience. It's going to help a lot of people. What's next for Jim? What's next? What are we looking forward to?
I have another book that I'm working on right now. It's called The Awakening. So I think I do remember this was before my heart attack. The Awakening is going to be everything about after, post heart attack, and how I've changed my life for the better, being able to slow down to speed up. And that will be coming out within I'm going to guess 6 to 8 months.
Yeah. Slowing down to speed up has helped me, again, on the ground, underneath, trying to get the rails in and breathing, right? Because if I hyperventilate under there, never going to get anything done. Slowing down to speed up. I love it, my friend. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having me on, Jeremy. I really appreciate it.
Yep, and I think, Dennis Volpe, we got a couple of people, Tim, who introduced us?
Dallas Cooper.
Dallas Cooper. This guy has introduced me. Him and Dennis Volpe have introduced me to such unbelievable champions that we need to follow. So thank you, Dallas Cooper. Thank you, Dennis Volpe, another naval serviceman who has introduced me to have some great people coming up on this podcast. We're going to put an end to this one, put it in the books, Jim. Don't go anywhere. I want to tell everyone who's listening right now, I hope you just go back and rewatch that, right? It went by really fast. All the little parts, we're going to take this thing, we're going to break it down into little segments and we're going to just replay the hell out of them because it really does apply to every single part of our lives. I love the part that he says, I apply every one of these kind of mindset steel traps to even my marriage, right? Don't let that slide, right? Relationships with your customers, with your clients. He's got a successful business still with all this training because it's the same mindset. Making himself sleep. I'm going to take a lesson from that, right? I'm like, yes, you also sleep 3 hours a night. But he said, no, I don't do that anymore, right? The little things in life, like having Dallas Cooper introduce someone to me like Jim Stegg, where I can have on my show and wake me up. I hope you do also have the same takeaways. Put down in the comments, what could you slow down to speed up? What is it that you're going to do that's going to have you chopping wood and changing lives? Not only your own, but your families and everyone who's watching that you don't even know who's watching. That's the slight edge advantage. Who's watching you do the things you're doing that you're going to impact without even knowing? I'm Jeremy Torres. Thanks for watching. We'll see you again real soon.